Shalom Aleichem. My name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. This week's Parsha is Parsha's Emor, and among the many things that it speaks about, it begins with speaking about certain halachas that are specific to the Kohenim, specifically to the Kohen Gadol, and with regard to the Avodas of Beit Hamikdash, as well as other types of halachas. And then the second part of the Parsha lists the different Yom Tovim, as well as Shabbos, and included within this discussion of the Yom Tovim, of course, the Pesach, and the counting of the Seir Sa'omer, as well as Shavuos, and we also learn about Sukkot and Shemini Atzeres. And then it goes on to halachas of the lighting of the menorah and the lechem upon him. And then, the very end, there is a discussion of the incident of a person who's known as the Mekalkel, the blasphemer, and the halachas that are relevant to a person who is a blasphemer, and the death penalty that they incur for that. And that's kind of where I want to focus on. It's a very strange story. It really is the end of the parsha, as I mentioned. It's in the seventh Aliyah, beginning. It's Perek Chaf Dalid, begins on Pasuk Yud. I'm not going to read it all inside, but basically, it's a person, a man who says one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's names, specifically the name that we refer to as the ineffable name, and he said this name of Hashem in a derogatory way, to put it mildly, and so the people didn't know what to do, and so they put him under guard until Moshe could clarify the halacha with Hashem. And Hashem, of course, told Moshe Rabbeinu that the blasphemer should be put to death by stoning. And so he was taken outside of the camp and stoned to death. The Torah doesn't provide any surrounding circumstances for this incident, but the Midrash in Vayikra Rabba, and as also brought by Rashi, fills in many of the details. So just to look at so there's a lot. It's an interesting story that Rashi brings down. Just to summarize, two different versions that are presented by the Midrash, and again, Rashi brings up. So the first one says that the Rachia says that the Mekalkel went around in the camp, and he was mocking the lechem upon him. He was mocking the showbread. As we learn in the pasuk, the section that's immediately before the story of the Mekalkel, the part of the irregular Avodas HaMishkan, as well as the Beis HaMikdash, of course, was to prepare the weekly Lechem HaPanim, the showbread. There's 12 different loaves were baked each week and placed into two sacks of six on a special shulchan, a special table. As we know that if you've ever seen renderings of what the Mefarshim, how they understand it to look like. So I believe Art Scroll in their Chumash has the pictures, many different pictures that I've seen out there. We don't exactly know 100% what it looked like, but the basic idea is it was not really a table the way we think of a table today, but more of a stack of shelves. Six on each side, so it's 12 total. Anyway, so these 12 loaves were baked each week and placed in the stack of six in the special in the shulchan and put in the mishkan. And these loaves were not allowed to be chametz, but they didn't look like matzah either. They had a special shape to them, kind of hard for me to describe, but they like curved a flat bottom. There's up on two sides, kind of curved a little bit towards the top. They were elaborately shaped, and they had to be baked by skilled artisans. It was not just a stand baker. And they were placed on the shulchan again for the entire week and eaten by the kohenim who were on duty the following Shabbos. And each week, these loaves were replaced. And so the Mefarshim explain that this Avodah was the channel through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha for prosperity and wealth flowed through the world. And so, again, according to this version of the Midrash, the Mekalkel mocked the lechem upon him, saying that a melech, a king, normally eats freshly baked bread. Here, however, the Kohanim ate the lechem upon him that was more than a week old. As the lechem upon him was normally baked on Fridays, as Yontif fell on Friday, then it was baked before Yontif. And so the Mechalkel question, how can we serve a Kodesh Baruch with stale bread? However, the Mechalkel would, when he had the patience and waited until the end of the week, he would have seen that the bread stayed warm and fresh al pineis, as it says in the Gemara Maseches Chagiga. Midrash teaches us another person rebuked the Mechalkel. Two of them got into a fight, and it was then that he uttered the blasphemy. And the second version that the Midrash brings down, according to this version, that the Mekalkel was the son of a Jewish woman from Shevet Dan, and an Ish Mitzri. In fact, it says in the Pasuk that it's based off of the Pasuk comes from, turning to it here, that it says it was a... here, where is it? Yeah, okay. It says here. That's the wrong passage. Sorry, I'm looking at a different chumash than I was when I prepared. So I'm looking for the page here. But here, to find that it's Pasukut Aleph. The right place. So that the son of the Israeli woman had become a he's done the blasphemy, but his mother was from Shalamis, was Baas Divri, and from Shevet Dan. That's again the pasuk is pasuk Yud Aleph. In the pasuk here it says here Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelis v'hu ben Ish Mitzri b'soich bnei Yisrael. Right? That the son of the Israeli woman, who was also the son of Ish Mitzri, went out among the Bnei Yisrael, and the son of the Israeli woman and his disputant, the Israeli man, quarreled concerning his place in the Machane. Again, that's the pasuk that the Midrash here is referring to. The Mefarshim point out that this was the only such case of a mixed marriage, a mixed parentage, and it's not clear that it's a marriage, but that mixed parentage from the entire time of Bnei Yisrael were avodim in Mitzrayim, and this was very praiseworthy. In fact, it's not even clear, as I mentioned, that this was a case of inappropriate behavior by the Jewish woman. The Midrash says that the Ish Mitzri snuck into the house at night, pretending to be the woman's husband. And the Midrash explains that even though the woman's behavior wasn't impeccable, it was clearly not a case of adultery. So the Mekalkel had tried to pitch his tent among Shevet Dan because that was his mother's tribe. The people from Shevet Dan asked him to leave because he was not actually a Dani. As we know, that one... the shevet that you're in follows your father. And as we mentioned, his father was a Mitzri. Of course, he was still Jewish because his mother's Jewish, but the shevet that you're in is connected to your father. So they took this matter to be judged by Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Mekalkel lost the case. He then stood up and uttered the blasphemy. So there's two different explanations from the different Midrash as for why the Makalkel did what he did. Perhaps they are both true. Let's see if we can merge the two stories together to get a deeper understanding. What prompted the Makalkel to criticize the Lechem upon him? Of course, it did not occur in the vacuum. We can suggest that Makalkel was hurt and upset because he was rejected by Shevet Dan and was forced to pack up his tent and move out. As a response to his feeling hurt, he lashed out blindly at an easy target, in this case, the Lechem upon him. There's a saying that hurt people. That is, people who themselves are hurt tend to lash out and hurt others. In this first case, the hurt is used as an adjective, and the second, of course, is used as a verb. The hurt people. So why do they do this? So we can leave the question to psychologists. I can mention that as a psychotherapist, that certainly there are, we have an understanding that our actions are connected to our thoughts, connected to our behaviors. So they certainly, our emotions, it's all connected. But it seems that somehow trying to protect themselves and avoid emotional pain and anguish, a person who is hurt in some way, shape, or form will often, but not always, often lash out at others. Again, there's a lot of different personalities out there, but this is not uncommon. Their behavior might not make sense, and it might even be counterproductive. But, as we know, human beings are not always logical. With this in mind, we have a deeper understanding of the behavior of the Makalkel. He was hurt, and so therefore, he was in a rage and he lashed out. Well, this behavior was not justified or excusable. After all, he was found guilty and was given a death penalty. But his behavior is at least understandable, and we can see where it stems from. Two important lessons that I think we can learn from this analysis. From the perspective of the person who is hurt and feels the need to lash out at someone else, it can be difficult to regulate our responses when we're angry or in emotional pain. But it's worth making the effort to do so. After all, if we're not careful, then we could act, chas v'shalom, in a destructive manner, and then we'll regret the behavior when we calm down. Remember what happened to the Makalkel. He was punished with, he was chayiv misa. There are a number of practical suggestions as to how we can do this. Relaxation techniques, deep breathing, counting to 10. There's many different psychological techniques that we can do. We each need to find the technique that works for us. There's something called grounding techniques that are connected to each one of the five senses. One of the point of the grounding technique is to snap you back, so to speak, into reality, into the present, or at least away from the negative thoughts that you're having. So one of the common examples is when a sense of touch is you hold on to an ice cube after, depending on your pain tolerance, after a few minutes, or a few moments, a few seconds, you're going to hold on to the ice cube, and all you can't help but feel the pain of the ice in your hand, and you're not going to think about something else. You get put back into the present. As an example of the sense of smell, you have smelling salts. They will literally wake people up from and bring them back out from. If they have fainted, and it can be used as well, not even a smelling salt, but a powerful smell can bring you away from, bring you back to reality. Sense of taste, a very bitter, very sour, very salty, a flavor that's not pleasing to you, yet you taste it, and you can't help but focus on it. In the sense of sound, sense of hearing rather, a really loud sound, something that's very irritating to hear, sense of sight, and a very disturbing image sometimes, or at least the flashes of light or something along those lines that you can't help but focus on will help you to move away from the psychological distress that you're in. From the perspective of someone who bears the brunt of the hurt of a person from a person who lashes out, it can be very helpful to realize that this person's behavior should not be taken personally. They're not necessarily out to get you. It may just be that they're angry and you happen to be the closest person around, the easiest target. This, of course, knowledge alone can help to diffuse the situation and help you to respond in a less emotional manner, although we are all human, and knowing that you're only being attacked, so to speak, just because you're the closest person doesn't necessarily make it easier in the moment, but upon reflection, hopefully, it will allow you to see things more clearly. And the key point would be to try to take a step back, whether it's literally or figuratively, and relax. Mitzvah Hashem, by reframing what the hurt that somebody may have done to us, we will be able to take away the pain from ourselves, and notice that one of the reasons why we might have been hurt is because the person who hurt us is coming from a sense of pain and anguish, and that should help us to want to help the other person ultimately. And then, Mr. Shem, by doing so, by helping other people, and of course by doing all the mitzvahs to the best of our ability, then we will be able to help usher in the Geula Shlema. We'll be able to see once again the nisim that occurred in the Beis Hamikdash, including that of the Lechem Upanim that stayed fresh from week to week. I wish everyone a good Shabbos. Thank you, Benjamin.